get a letter.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
15, 22-24.
Good afternoon.
Why is it not evening yet?
Yeah, I know. Close.
Feels like it. All right. Sir, can you identify yourself for the record, spelling your last name and indicating the authority you're representing here today?
Yes, Detective DeBord, that's D-U-B-O-R-D, representing the Richfield Police Department.
Okay, Detective, you're entitled to a brief opening statement if you'd like.
Okay. This denial is in regards to the suitability for incomplete application. Appellant failed to disclose the eavesdropping charge he was arrested for on February 18th of 2010. He checked the yes box to having been convicted, but failed to disclose that he was convicted of disorderly conduct, and that was on March 21st, 2011. During the interview, the appellant stated that there were no other arrests besides the 1989 DUI, 1990 DUI, and the 2010 aggravated harassment second. Also, record check with New York State Police shows police report of the eavesdropping slash aggravated harassment incident in 2010.
Thank you, Detective. Sir, would you like to make an opening statement?
Sure. Do I have to identify myself or?
No, you may remain anonymous.
Okay. I'll be quite honest, the application is very confusing. In the essence that I, arrest and convictions are two different things, and I made a mistake. I wasn't trying to hide anything, as is clear by the fact that I even mentioned South Salem, New York on the application. On top of that, you know, a lot of what is written in the denial letter about me is incomplete and misses a tremendous amount of context, which I don't really want to keep you guys here to hear all of it, but I'll answer any questions you guys might have. I've an owner of a firearm since I, the age of 12. I shot competition at the age of 12 through 18. I was a certified NRA instructor for home safety, personal protection, and also pistol permitting. I've been a permit holder in the past. Like I said, I've owned weapons for 40 years. I've never had any issue misfiring, improper discharge. I've been a range officer. I actually used to shoot at the police department when I worked for the town of Richfield. So to say that I'm not suitable is kind of insulting, because I've done the work.
Sir, Detective, you may tell us what you'd like us to know.
Okay. Well, as stated earlier, the applicant was arrested for eavesdropping and aggravated harassment second, 2010, and was later convicted of disorderly conduct, which the applicant did not disclose on his application. The applicant or appellant was involved in a physical altercation in August of 2012, where he became aggressive towards another individual by grabbing that person by the neck and threw him up against a stone wall. The appellant admitted that person he grabbed called him a name, to which point the appellant grabbed the person's shirt, and that the other person grabbed his shirt, and that the appellant's shirt was ripped. The appellant stated that they shoved each other back and forth until a friend intervened. No charges were filed. In April of 2018, our agency investigated a neighborhood dispute. It was reported that the appellant stated the following to a neighbor. Am I allowed to curse during this, or?
You can curse.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
If you're quoting something.
I am quoting, I just don't want to, end quote. Quote, "I don't know what kind of shit you are trying to stir up here, or stir up, but it's going to come back to you tenfold, bitch," end quote. It was also reported that the applicant showed his neighbor the middle finger and yelled, quote, "You fucking asshole," end quote. During the same incident, it was reported that the applicant pulled down his pants and exposed his buttocks to the neighbor and his 11-year-old daughter. A warrant was applied for in this case, however, was denied. In 2019, our agency responded to the applicant's residence for a voluntary surrender of firearms. The applicant was requested to surrender or requested the surrender of safekeeping due to an ongoing neighbor dispute. In the report, there was no further details to why the firearms were being turned in. The three firearms were taken in for safekeeping: a Glock 23 pistol, a Remington 1100 shotgun, and a Gustav Genchow, if that's how you say it, Cal 22 rifle. Also taken in was a high-capacity 13 magazine that belonged to the Glock. And then in June of 2020, the applicant's firearms were returned. With that also said, when the letter went out to the appellant, there was a correction that needed to be made as far as an incident where the appellant posted someone off his property, where it was reversed, where he was posted off. There was a phone call made to the chief on April 19th, 2021, where Chief Kreitz spoke via telephone to the appellant. The appellant had left a message requesting that the chief contact him regarding temporary permit, pistol permit being denied for suitability. The appellant advised Chief Kreitz that he was not posted off the property, as stated in the first denial letter, but he had posted an individual off his property. In review of the case, Chief Kreitz made the correction of the denial letter and sent the applicant a copy. In speaking with the appellant further, he stated that he had some bad decisions in the past and that he knew that they were wrong. Chief Kreitz asked the appellant what prompted him to voluntarily surrender his firearms to our agency in 2019. The appellant stated that he has been involved in an ongoing neighbor dispute and that he had thought to himself at that time, quote, "What, do I need to shoot somebody to keep them off my property?" End quote. The appellant added that he would not do that as he is not a violent person. For that. Now, there's a new item I received from the appellant that was actually a letter given to you. I'm not sure if you received it or not.
The appellant?
We received. I saw it two days ago.
I had mailed in an entire packet.
Is it the?
It's a letter.
It says to the Board of Firearms Examiners.
Yeah, one item New York charge.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if I can present this or not. There were some quotes in here by the appellant that are different than what he had stated in his incident slash action accident, not accident, arrest report from New York State Police, as far as his statement as to what occurred.
Do we have that?
No, this you don't have.
What is that?
This is the arrest report and incident report of the eavesdropping slash aggravated harassment case.
Wasn't that case erased? I have in my notes that
it was not. Yeah, it was not on on like SPBI or NCIC.
So was it erased?
So it's irrelevant then, right? It's been erased?
I don't know if New York erases anything.
Yeah, they do that weird thing.
Yeah, but it's still
a like employees.
Still shows.
But I'm not even going to.
I think it just showed.
Yeah.
Interpret New York law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without any paper.
Well.
There was a state ID number issued, but when you run a number, nothing comes up.
Well, the appellant has submitted this letter, so if you have a statement that contradicts it,
that's the only
reason
why.
You can tell us what ways it contradicts. Is the New York charge a basis of the denial or no?
Not the charge itself, but the failure to disclose all of the charges and the conviction.
All right, well, the appellant has brought up that charge, so if there's something you would like to point out to us, we don't have that in evidence, so the only evidence we're going to entertain is what you're reading out loud to us.
Okay. So in the appellant's letter, he states that he gave the phone to the victim of
the. Point us to where you're looking.
So the third.
Page one.
Yeah, page one.
Mm-hmm.
About fourth paragraph down says, during that time I had given her a cell phone of mine to use.
Yeah.
So that she could reach out to people she met in the meetings as well as call the appellant.
Yep.
Another point he states At the very bottom, where it says C card figure two, I was going to Florida, and she was going to go with me. That never happened, and the next few months were a bit rocky. Then in February 2010, I was arrested for accessing my phone.
Where are you looking?
Just above, where it says item two, that one last sentence. Now, when I read that, it made me go back to his statement, that the appellant's statement he made to the investigator for the New York State Police,
mm-hmm.
where initially there was, I guess I'll call her the victim so I don't state her name. The victim in that whole case agreed to conduct a controlled phone call with the appellant. The victim signs a consent form to conduct the controlled call, which was included in the case file, the original case file. The victim attempts to contact the appellant from her cell phone, on his cell phone, but it goes directly to voicemail. The victim later attempts to contact the appellant. At this time, he answers. The victim speaks with the appellant for 19 minutes and 3 seconds. During the conversation, the appellant admits to monitoring the victim's cell phone's voicemail since November 2006. The appellant advises that he did not place a device on her phone and that he listened to her voicemails by calling her phone and entering her PIN code from his cell phone to listen to her messages. The appellant advises the victim provided him with the PIN in November 2006, however acknowledges that it was not so he could listen to her voicemails. The appellant states that he called from restricted numbers when she was distant by using *67 to block his phone number in order to hear her voice. The victim informed the appellant not to contact her again and to cease monitoring her phone calls. The appellant agrees and asks the victim to change her voicemail PIN, as it would be too tempting for him not to check her voicemail if the old PIN is still active. Then later, the appellant was notified by the New York State Police investigator on his cell phone, and he agreed to meet her at the State Police headquarters. Looks like the appellant was read his Miranda rights and agreed to discuss the matter. The appellant provides an account consistent with the victim's, what victim provides in paragraph one of this report. The appellant denies ever placing a monitoring device on the victim's phone. Furthermore, he remains adamant that he only routinely called the victim's phone from a restricted number and hung up and listened to her voicemail to ensure that she was not relapsing or in trouble, advising that he never had intentions of harming her. After further inquiry, the appellant admits that he can understand how the actions may have caused alarm and concern to the victim and her family. The appellant refused to provide his account in a written statement. Now I read those because in his letter he sent to you, he states that it was his phone, and that he was arrested for accessing his phone. But in his initial statements, when the incident occurred, he never mentioned that it was his phone at all.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that I believe is it.
Okay. Sir, do you have any questions?
Well, and one of the things he just said, I was called.
Are you asking him a question?
I don't have a question for him.
You don't? Okay.
Okay.
Does the board have any questions of the detective? Detective, do you have any other witnesses?
No, I do not.
Okay. Sir, now you may tell us what you'd like us to know.
Okay. What he was just saying, the woman in question in that instance did have my cell phone on a number of occasions. Sometimes it was her cell phone. She also signed HIPAA forms for therapists to talk to me, psychologists, psychiatrists, and while I was trying to help her to find peace with her permits, which I didn't know at the time in 2006 what it was, but I did reach out, do an extensive amount to try to help her, including her family. I got that, I believe I wrote it down in there about, you know, getting them involved in a family connections program for borderline personality disorder. I don't know how much any of you know about it. If you know anybody with it, run. That's all I could say. So, yes, you know, it was a situation that lasted for many years. Maybe I did things I shouldn't have done, but at the same time, I also saved the girl's life. So, you know, if you want to hold that against me, you know, it doesn't prevent me from demonstrating over the course of my life my ability to properly handle a firearm. And the training I've had is extensive, far more than most people that have permits. So, as far as what's written in here, yes, I would have fought that court case in the eavesdropping with an attorney, but my mother was struggling with dementia at the time, and I was her caregiver, and I was trying to take care of her while working, trying to pay my bills and to go. I was issued a public defender in over in New York, as you guys were mentioning. It's a little kind of crazy. I had, because it was a felony charge of eavesdropping, I had to use, I believe it was Westchester Legal Aid Society, and they issued an attorney to me who never listened to a thing I said and tried to get me to agree to, actually I would have not been eligible for a firearm if I hadn't listened to him. And then when the charges were reduced, I was given an attorney who, 6 months after he convinced me to accept these charges, he bludgeoned his wife to death with a table leg, shot his two children, and shot himself. So I was pretty poorly represented in that, but I had other things going on, and I would have continued, but my mother got much sicker. And over the course of the next 10 years of my life, I've had to deal with all kinds of things that I could not even possibly begin to explain in this meeting, including, you know, the fact that I was involved for over 20 plus years as a district committee member for Alcoholics Anonymous and helping many of people. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the TV show The Cleanser, of the guy who went out and like helped people that were struggling. That was me. I helped hundreds of people find recovery. I've dragged people into rehab, detoxes, the whole nine yards. But as far as my suitability, nothing in the report, and it even says it in their paperwork, that there's nothing there that prevents me from being a suitable candidate for a carry permit, which I have had in the past.
Counsel, do you have any cross?
No.
Support, any questions, the appellant? Sir, do you have any other witnesses?
No.
Would you like to make a closing statement?
Sure. I thank you for your time. Again, I believe that, you know, the history of my life shows that I'm not a threat by being issued a firearm permit. I've done the work, I've done the training, I have more extensive training than most people out there that carry permits, and that have carry permits today. Actually, people are licensed as a result of my training with them, but somehow I'm not suitable because of some instances which, you know, we can sit here and discuss whether they were right or wrong, but I've done my best in my life, and I don't feel that I'm a threat to anybody by me possessing a firearm, which I happen to have three of them, which I've had for over 40 years. Well, at least one of them I've had for over 40 years. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Detective?
No. No further remarks.
All right. Comments by the board? Dr. Conrad.
Your position is one on suitability?
Yes.
Sir? based on the reports or the application?
Both.
Issuing authority at this time.
Colonel Lewis?
Issuing authority.
Ms. Johnson?
Issuing authority.
Chief Rosenzweig?
Issuing authority.
Acting Chair votes issuing authority. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All